Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Crash MotoGP podcast. And after an incredible race in Coda, we've got plenty to discuss. Pete, we'll just get straight into it. Maverick Vinales is officially the first person to win on three different manufacturers in the MotoGP era. What an incredible weekend for him.
Was pretty much a dream weekend, wasn't it? I mean, not just to do the double, but the way he did it, wasn't it? Leading from the front in the sprint and then having to fight right the way back from what the bottom end of the top 10 in the Grand Prix. I mean, just fantastic for Maverick. I suppose, we've got to start to think of him as a title contender, really, haven't we? If he can continue this run. Yeah. I mean, he's won every race he's finished for the last, four races, if you like. Only the gearbox in Portimao that went wrong, and he was online for a podium there. So, yeah, we didn't know, did we, coming into the weekend, would he be able to carry the speed that he had in Portimao to a different track? I think we were all speaking about, he is good at COTA, so that was on his side already. But without doubt, he carried that speed and more, didn't he, into this weekend?
Yeah.
And, it just shows also that whatever that setting is that they finally found with the bike that he was searching for all the way through the winter, he kept saying, the balance is not what I need. It's not what I had on the other bike at the end of the last year. Of course, the bike had changed, so you got to start all that work again. It looks like whatever they found works. And spectacular.
Yeah, Rob, it was an incredible weekend for him. He was so unlucky in Portimao, and to reset and come back and be even stronger. I mean, the pace that he had in both races, just incredible, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've seen in the past Vinales have those sorts of, let's say, special weekends where he puts it all together, wins the race, qualifies on pole, and he's very hard to beat. But I think the consistency that he did it with this weekend, to put it on pole, with a new lap record, the only rider to do a sub 2 minute 0.1 second lap, then to win the sprint in dominant fashion. I think it was the first couple of laps he had Marc Marquez with him, and then the third lap it was just 8 tenths quicker, and it just broke the stranglehold of the race, essentially split the group up. And then, I mean, yesterday I call it his best ever race. And I think we've always seen, whether it's through contact or him just naturally starting down the order, we've been waiting for him to produce on a weekend where he's shown that pace, but for some reason it's gone wrong. But what he did yesterday, to have the incident at turn one, drop to 11th, and then just come through the pack the way he did, overtaking the biggest names in the sport, and then still win in dominant fashion again, I think he'll look back at it as one of his best races ever. And I think it's definitely the sort of potential he showed. You can't look past him as a title contender at the moment.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, for me personally, I think it's the best weekend he's ever had in MotoGP. It's kind of ironic, maybe 7 years ago we expected this from Maverick on a weekly basis on the Yamaha, and it's maybe taken to this point. We know he's an incredible rider, but when he's in that vein of form, that he can't be stopped. And I think, like you say, Rob, when he got pushed wide at turn one, and I thought maybe it's history repeating itself. He was middle of the pack. Is he going to come through? We know he has the pace. But with him and the Aprilia this weekend, they were in a different league compared to the others. And especially through that first and last sector, he was just untouchable. And yeah, I'm really happy for him. I think he's a different sort of character, Maverick. People, I think, misunderstand him. There was a lot of, how can we say, when he had that breakup with Yamaha, people viewed him a bit differently. But you know, he's a family man. He was really emotional, I seen after the race to DAZN and the press conference and they were speaking to him. You know, he was in tears, you know, thanking his family for all the support for the difficult times. And it is a contract year for him, Pete, and he's delivering the perfect results to really, you know, show that he's the leader at Aprilia, you know, going forward, isn't he?
Carries on like this, yes. I mean, he took a big gamble, didn't he? Leaving Yamaha for Aprilia, we should say, talking about contracts, wasn't it? Was it back in two and a half years ago, I suppose,
yeah.
Now? And, you know, that shocked everyone, didn't it? You know, walking out of Yamaha that was then quite, you know, dominant competitive brand, teammate to Quartararo. He won a race that year, and I think he'd been on pole at, was it Assen just before
he
announced?
He did, yeah, yeah.
Even. And then suddenly that's it, and he goes to Aprilia, who at the time hadn't even had a podium, I don't think. So he made that leap of faith. He believed in himself. He believed he needed something different. And as you say, a lot of people questioned that move and said, you know, are we ever going to see Maverick back at the front again? But look at the success they've had. And it's a credit to him. It's a credit to all the guys at Aprilia as well. I mean, just look at what that bike has done as well. If we just take Maverick out of it, credit to the team as well, that they've taken that bike from the back of the grid to the front, literally, haven't they?
Yeah.
And, you know, to beat the likes of Ducati, KTM, there's you know, all the European bikes are fast now, and to perform as it did around COTA. Aleix, okay, it was his best weekend. We were just speaking about it off camera, weren't we? But still, he was up there, wasn't he? Top five,
yeah,
at his worst track in the sprint. Bit of trouble in the main race. He dropped back and had to fight his way through, obviously not able to replicate Vinales' fight back. But still, it was a decent enough result for him, given it is pretty much his worst track.
Yep.
So some big races coming up for him as he thinks about his future and everything else. But I think, yeah, for Maverick and Aprilia, coming back to your question, you've got to believe it makes sense to continue.
Yeah, and, you know, I think this is what Aprilia expected when they signed him 2 years ago. Essentially, they wanted him to be the rider. And yeah, he had struggles like you both mentioned in testing, but if he can keep up this form going to circuits that he does like, you know, he's won in Le Mans before, he's been very strong, like you say, Peter Assen. This season's very interesting for him, and I think it's great to have Maverick up the front because we know how good he has been on Suzuki, on a Yamaha, and now he's shown it really on an Aprilia. I'm here for it. And yeah, I'll just actually go through the Grand Prix. I'll go through the standings, so if you're listening. So Maverick Vinales won with Pedro Acosta second place. We'll talk about him in a moment. Enea Bastianini third and Jorge Martín fourth and Pecco Bagnaia in fifth. So that's the Grand Prix. And you're wondering, where is the King of Coda? Where is Marc Marquez's name? If you didn't see the race, he crashed out, Rob, on lap 11 while in the lead. It was looking to be his best weekend so far on the Ducati. And whatever it was, an issue, like he said, with the brakes, it ended in tears for him.
Yeah, I think, obviously, for Marquez, this was a big opportunity this weekend. I think we all expected him to maybe grab a race win at some point, whether that was the sprint or the Grand Prix. And like you said, he'd just taken the lead, and it felt like that was his point in the race where he was going to try and push the pace, try and push on and see if he could maybe escape or if he could just... I think for him, he obviously had those braking issues,
yeah,
that we didn't know at the time. So I think for him to just try and get some cool air on the front tire was just as big as taking the race lead itself. But then obviously came the downfall and that crash, which was a heavy front end fall as well.
Yep.
It was very, very disappointing for Marquez. I think he would have expected to have at least won a race. It was his best weekend in terms of pace on the Ducati, but the same time, we probably expected that just naturally given his record at COTA. But I think it's hard to say it's a big missed opportunity because it wasn't his fault. There were braking issues, but what it has done is dropped him further down in the championship. And after three rounds, already be, I think it's what, 44 points behind
44,
Martin?
Yeah.
It's a big deficit already. So he'll be very disappointed that he didn't at least get on the podium in the Grand Prix.
Yeah, and Pete, it was such an epic battle in that Grand Prix for those 11 laps with Mark. You know, he'd made contact with Martin. You know, there was a bit of bumping and barging, but, you know, the overtakes were fantastic with him and Pedro Acosta. It was lining up to be an all-time great race with those and everyone in it. It still was a fantastic race in the end. But, you know, when you look back at Mark's weekend, when you heard his comments after the race, do you think he was disappointed or was he optimistic, you know, that this is a right direction, even though the result wasn't what he wanted?
Yeah, we were speaking about this earlier, weren't we, Rob? Just chatting. And, you know, I think it's almost similar to Vinales' gearbox problem, the situation, because a bit like Vinales was saying, look, I'm happy. Even though I walked away with nothing, I was fast when it happened. I know why it happened. Let's get to the next race. And I think it's almost a bit of that with Mark. You know, he knows why he went down. There was the issue with the brakes. Let's not forget, he was missing a wing as well, wasn't he?
That's
after
true.
That earlier contact. So we had clear damage to the bike in one area, another part of the bike that wasn't working too well. He was miles ahead of the next GP23s again. Where I think Digi had pretty much his best race of the year, didn't he? But what, 9 seconds or something from the lead at the end?
Mm-hmm.
You know, almost half a second a lap. So again, Mark was up there. It's going to hurt, isn't it? You know, falling out of the lead at one of his best tracks, obviously. He's gonna be replaying that in his mind, I'm sure. But he knows why it happened, and he was fast again, and he made a step. And once we found out about those brake problems, it kind of made sense. The incidents that you mentioned, the clipping Martin, and as Rob mentioned, the reasons for it. It wasn't just that he was, you know, inconsistent braking, having to pump the lever, but also he's in a rush to try and get to the front, to try and get some clear air on the bike. So those two things together were making him sort of try and sort of desperately get in front of people. And then, of course, as soon as he does that, that's when he falls. So we'll never know what might have happened between him and Maverick, you know, if he'd have stayed on. It's certainly not guaranteed that Mark would have won, is it? And I think that's also something that maybe will be a bit of consolation. Maybe Mark's looking at that, you know, the speed of Maverick at the end of the race and saying, you know what, I think he probably would have got me anyway.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, he said he wanted a podium, didn't he? That was what he said publicly. I'll sign for a podium. He got one in the sprint. He was on course for one, or certainly quick enough for one in the Grand Prix.
Yeah.
So I think for his third race on the bike, yeah, it's a missed opportunity, but a lot of positives as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of, how could we say, there's positivity there. You know, he did lose, a lot of points if in the Grand Prix, but I think he'd rather be crashing out of the lead, knowing that he's quick and he can be there with these guys. And, you know, his day will come. I don't think, looking at his comments after, there was a bit of optimism there. And he knows that there was an issue. He was trying his best to work with the issue. But, you know, even the greats of this sport, when the issues go against them, they can't always put off miracles. And I think Mark Marquez was great. So he was this weekend. And I think it reaffirmed a lot of people. Yeah, this guy, for his third race on a Ducati, and he's still, like you've mentioned, Pete, so far clear of the 23s. Yeah. He is he's going to be a factor in many races this season, and I do think there is, he'll look at it as a good weekend, even though the result in the Grand Prix wasn't there. Jorge Martin, now, I did promise in the last podcast that we would talk about him, and I still think he did score a podium in the sprint, Pete, but didn't score one in the Grand Prix. But I still think he's the man to beat. You know, what was your thoughts on his weekend?
His podium run finally ends, isn't it? He'd been there every race of the done five in a row when he counted in the sprints as well. He'd been on the, he'd done that consistency as we spoke about in the previous podcast. The thing that he needed to do, get that consistency, he delivered it. As you say, a bit of a disappointing race for him on Sunday, but I think he, from his own words, he paid the price for those qualifying falls. He didn't get to try the medium rear tire because he lost time with all the chaos with the accident and things like that. And so, Vinales, Acosta, they went with the medium, didn't they, in the Grand Prix. Bastianini was on the soft and Martin was on the soft. So really, Martin was there battling with the best guy on the soft, the soft rear. And Marc Marquez was also on the soft, so he would have been up there as well. So he was there. He was near enough. He lost out to Bastianini at the end. I think one of you guys pointed out last week that, you know, Bastianini's he's good on the tyres at the end of the race. And that's probably what made the difference in that fight there, I would say, is that, you know, with that soft rear, Bastianini just had a bit more grip left at the end. But still, far from a disaster, brings home the points and, keeps that healthy championship lead. He doesn't want to talk about it, but he's doing everything right at the moment, isn't he?
He definitely is, Rob. You know, as Pete mentioned, qualifying, it was deja vu for him in qualifying. He suffered two crashes in qualifying last year, and he started 12th. This time he suffered two crashes. The second one was it was a quick crash that he had. Lucky to get up and get back to the pits with that. Still qualified 6th. You know, when he looks at the weekend, a 3rd place and a 4th place, that's very good, isn't it, still?
Yeah, it's very good weekend all around for Martin. Obviously, coming off Friday and the sort of performance he showed in practice, qualifying was definitely not what we expected. To have those two crashes, both times on his first flying lap, in the sense of obviously his first lap out, he had the front end crash. got back on the bike. I think he surprised a lot of people when he didn't go into pit lane and he went for another lap. And then he obviously, coming through the last sector, had the bike where it sort of, it kicked on the rear and then sort of pushed him off on the front again. So his qualifying was massively hampered by that. But to put it on the second row and show that again, even with such dramas going on, he could get over that. And basically his race, if I think, was saved by the fact that he was able to get back onto the second row. If he hadn't have done that, I think it would have made it a lot harder. And then his pace in both races, I mean, he made good starts, which was key. And then he was able to fight at the front. He clearly just didn't have the tire and the pace at the end of the Grand Prix. Once Vinales sort of came through, he really struggled to hold on to Vinales and Acosta, actually. But again, the consistency he showed, and to come away with more points and a, you know, increased championship lead, I think he'll be really, really happy with that.
Yeah, just pipped to the podium in the Grand Prix by Enea Bastianini. We'll talk about Enea in a moment. I want to call on to Pedro Acosta, who is just, you know, is it too early to say this, that maybe it is too early, but he is a championship contender, surely, isn't he, going in after this weekend?
No, I saw that the stat before the start of the year, wasn't it? Was how many races he's got to beat Marquez's youngest winner record. And I got to admit, I thought it's going to be a tough job. But I mean, now you'd almost bet on it, wouldn't you? I mean, it's even from the next race. And if you're constantly on the podium and you just need to be winning the races, and then, yeah, you are a title contender, aren't you? We've been saying about the consistency, and he's up there. He's riding wild, but he's not making the big mistakes, is he? He's not falling, and that's the key thing. He's sort of testing those limits all the time, and impressive that, just coming back to the tyre thing, but he went with the medium when all of the other KTMs chose the soft.
Yeah.
Imagine that, as a rookie, your third race, all the other guys on the bike with all their experience have gone, we're going with the soft, and you go, no, I don't think that's right for me, I'll go with the mediums. And then, you know, it just shows the confidence that he's got and the team around him, to know that, you know, this is what I need to do. And I think that was a big decision by him, and he made it work. Riding great. As I say, it's that on the edge, but not over the edge too far. And, it looks a bit scrappy at times, but he's making it work. And I think that's how he's finding, you know, he's teasing the limits all the time, but not going too far. And that's amazing bike control to do that.
It's fantastic. And Rob, me and Pete discussed it before we started recording. It's like when you see the onboards, like Pete mentioned, like he is pushing the front so much, but the way he's able to stop the bike, like almost and like run into someone and just turn it, his bike control is outstanding. And some people wonder, when they come up from Moto2, it takes them a while to adapt. Arguably, you could just say it's like, oh yeah, this is a better machine. I could do even more on this. I can show people just how good I am. You know, he qualified second. He was then fourth in the sprint, and then he gets second in the Grand Prix after leading a load of laps and, you know, closing down Maverick in the end, but then Maverick pulled the pin. There's just not enough words to describe how good this kid is.
No, the way he's adapted has blown my mind for sure. Again, his sort of bike control, there was a couple of onboards throughout the weekend, one in the sprint and one in the Grand Prix, of him sort of looking directly from the front end of the bike. And he was getting so close. I think one of them was behind Martin. He was getting so close under braking. You're thinking, surely he's gone in too deep and he's actually going to pick the bike up and just run wide. And he continued to just stay there and actually make the corner perfectly. And then, I mean, he sort of hinted at it post-race that he's not found the limit of the bike yet, which is crazy to think, because he appears to be on the limit. But what's, I think, more impressive is it's always under control. You know, he's not crashing, he's not throwing the bike in the gravel. So he's riding, you know, still his level of knowledge of the MotoGP bike is, you know, very low compared to the riders around him. And the fact that he's pushing so hard but looking so comfortable while doing it is incredible. And I think he's getting very, very close to a first race win. Obviously, yesterday was an opportunity, but Vinales had better pace later on. But I think it just showed again that KTM have got an absolute superstar in their ranks. And the way, you know, with Binder struggling, that could have been a lost weekend in the past for KTM. But Acosta's sheer determination and speed to be at the front is just not giving KTM a bad result at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. And Pete, why do you think he's so good in the Grand Prix compared to a sprint? Because we've seen it, we've seen Martin kind of rough him up and that kind of annoyed him, but he never really recovered from that on Saturday. But why do you think in the Grand Prix he's able to just be faster? Is it a tire thing, or what do you think by looking at him?
Hardest thing is for a rookie is the one lap in qualifying, isn't it? And you guys have made the point that he did well on this weekend and put it on the front row. So that's a big box ticked. That's normally the last thing that they crack, because that's when you need to ride the bike at the absolute limit for the whole lap. And I suppose if you work sort of away from that, the Grand Prix with the longer distance, we know that the early part of the race can be quite tactical, can't it? Especially with people on soft tires. People are not riding at 100%. They're saving fuel, they're saving the tire and everything else. We saw it in Qatar especially, didn't we? And so you do have a chance, and you have a longer time to build your speed up. This is also what Marquez says, isn't it? Is that, you know, lap after lap, you can take a little bit more out of a corner. You go, well, that worked. I'll try a little bit more. And then you reach the limit and you step it back a bit. By doing those consecutive laps, you're able to sort of find the limit more. I also think he's probably learning from the riders around him. You know, racing these great guys at the front, he's studying them, isn't he? He's seeing what they're doing. He's picking things up. Oh, right, that's how they go into that corner. They're gaining a bit on me there. I'll try and do something differently. Maybe he's also, literally on the fly, sort of picking up more speed as he goes along. But it's incredible what he's doing, and it's great. And you, it's a good point you make about the KTM, if you like. What would we be saying if Acosta wasn't there? We'd all be saying, oh, the KTM, what's wrong with it?
Yeah.
You know, there's something wrong with the bike. It doesn't work at Kota. And yet, when you've got that one guy, it can transform it and make it work. And suddenly it's, well, you know, he's shown that KTM could work, even when guys like Binder, I think Binder, he had a bit of a foot injury, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
A bit of a messy weekend. But and Jack Miller, they seemed to hit trouble, didn't they? It was a few, obviously the Ducatis that I suppose we'll come on to with the chatter, a few unexpected problems for some bikes that looked really, really sort of well-rounded coming into the weekend.
Yeah, like you say, Brad Binder, I think, casually dropped in on his, I think it was Thursday or Friday, Pete, he just said, oh yeah, I kind of like broke something in my foot a few weeks ago. And like, but it's like the most Brad Binder thing of all time, where it's like, yeah, it doesn't really matter. It's like, yeah. Okay, Brad, like everyone else that had done that, a normal person would be off work for 2 months. Binder, yeah, not a bad weekend. I think he kind of, his qualifying was really, it really done him in there, but he still finished ninth in the Grand Prix. And, you know, when he looks at Acosta, he's probably going, bloody hell, what are we going to do next when we get to Jerez, a track that they were so fast at last year? So I can't wait to see what happens there. That's going to be, maybe potentially, that'll be Acosta's, his big moment. He's got the home crowd behind him. He had massive support last year when he was in Moto2. Obviously, MotoGP now, the Spanish are going to be loving that, so let's see what it costs.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
So can do. You mentioned Ducati, Pete. We'll talk about Pecco Bagnaia, but simply this factory team. I don't know what's happened to Bagnaia since that sprint race in Portimao, but the chattering issues seem to be really catching him out compared to the other GP24, maybe the other Ducati riders, would you say?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what was it? Yeah, it seems like there's something been happening in every race, isn't it? As you say, that bobble under braking for the lead in the sprint in Portimao. Then he clashes with Marquez while sort of lacking speed in the Grand Prix. Then you have the sprint at Cota, and was it a bad tyre? You know, they're careful not to say that, but certainly he didn't have the grip he expected from it. But he then used it in the warm-up, the same tyre.
Exactly.
It seemed to be okay. So he then picks, the soft rear, obviously a new one, for the Grand Prix, and was great for, what, half a dozen laps. And then suddenly he just sort of faded away. And it seems like this chatter issue, which has been there off and on, hasn't it? Really all the tracks this year reared its head again. And it's going to be a worry that we're five races or five events in, if you count the winter tests as well, and the problem's still there. And it seems like, obviously, it depends on the grip level. So maybe when the tyres are new, the start of the race, qualifying, it's not so much of an issue. As the grip starts to go down, something all lines up on the bike in terms of the vibrations and the frequencies, and they're getting these chatter issues. And I think Jorge Martin also had a bit of chatter, not a major issue, but I think he said it cost him maybe one or two tenths a lap. So it's still there. It's still there. Bastianini also said that, had some strange sort of grip issues during the weekend, not what he expected in the races. So I think there'll be some head scratching at Ducati, and it will be a concern that we're this far into the season and they're still having these issues rearing their head. And for Bagnaia, you know, he came into the weekend wanting redemption, didn't he? Lost the lead a year ago, problems with Marquez in Portimao, and instead, really, it was where was he? Fifth and eighth or something. In the end, I mean, that's obviously not what he's expecting as the reigning champion, and really, for many people, the title favourite.
Yeah, as Pete says, Rob, it was a weird weekend for Pecco. He said on Friday he felt pretty good from what he had said, and he had looked pretty comfortable. He was inside the top three. He was second on Friday after all the practice, so he was really there. He was showing really good pace. I don't know, with the sprint, it just seemed as the start was really the one that you've seen it. You know, he lit the rear up and it kind of launched him out of the seat almost, and he had to regroup, and he did okay to finish eighth because he was stuck in 10th for a long time. And you know, I thought going into the Grand Prix he would show a bit more, and he did in the early laps, like Pete said. But yeah, when he sees Jorge Martin ahead of him and he sees his teammate ahead of him, you know, it's a lot of head scratching for Pecco and his set of the garage, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, to your point, he called Friday one of the best Fridays he's had in a long time, and his pace was very good. So it seemed like he was at least going to be somewhat in contention like last year. Obviously, he was quite dominant last year in the sprint and then crashed out of the lead. But it was never quite that good of a weekend this time around. And obviously the sprint, like you said, that star where he got launched really high off the line, it sort of impacted him straight away. He went, I think, down to 10th. And just struggled to pass the likes of Raul Fernandez, Morbidelli, who were, you know, to their credit, having good weekends, but normally riders who aren't fighting for the same positions as Bagnaia. But he was struggling to make progress. Obviously, the chatter, and he has some tyre problems, which was the same for Bastianini in the sprint. But then the Grand Prix, you know, in the early laps, he's got up to third, I think, and he was right there in the battle for the lead and seemed to have more pace. But it was just a case of, and really surprising, actually, that it just never improved from that point on. We always think of Bagnaia sort of gets stronger as the weekend goes on.
Yeah.
And by the time the Grand Prix comes around, he's in his best form. He's at one with the bike and he sort of delivers his best performance. But it just, even when he was at the front running sort of behind the likes of Martin and then Bastianini, it just never felt like he could go beyond that. He could do anything more. So a bit of a head scratcher for Pecco, obviously. Portimao was a lot of lost points in the race,
yep,
and to lose points in both races again to Martin, be outperformed by Acosta in both races, Vinales, you know, he's losing valuable points. It's still so early that we expect him to at some point hit a purple patch and win some races. But considering his form last year at COTA, I think he'd be quite disappointed with this weekend.
Yeah, it's a real, like you have mentioned, in testing Bagnaia and maybe Bastianini, they seemed like they were having such a good time of it and there was no real issues there. Jorge Martin was the one who struggled maybe the most in testing out of the 24s. I don't know what it is. Maybe Martin spent more time trying to fix the issues that they really thought they didn't have, if that makes sense. And maybe now that Bagnaia has seen that Martin is, he's ahead of him and he's like, why am I unable to do that? I had a good testing pre-season. I don't know what to say about Bagnaia. It's such a strange weekend for him. It wasn't a bad weekend, but it's just very un-Pecco like over the past season and a half. You know, I expected more from him, but we'll get to Europe and I think he'll be very strong. Like we said, Pete, he's very good at bouncing back when he has a tough weekend. So I think Jerez will be a better weekend if he doesn't have these issues. But we'll talk about Enea Bastianini. Rob, again, just appears out of nowhere. He's always just kind of there in the background. And to get a podium at a circuit that he won at.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, the sprint didn't go probably as he would have liked. And he said after the race that it sort of left him not really looking forward to the Grand Prix just because they were sort of worried about potential tyre problems again. But his performance, I think what's important for Bastianini in such a crucial season, the fact that he was able to pass Pecco on track and finish ahead of him on merit and then do the same to Martin, that will be big for Bastianini. He got stronger as the race went on, and it's becoming a common trend now. A little bit like Vinales, actually. As the race goes on, his late race pace is honestly stunning at times.
Yeah.
It's really, really fast. And if there was a few more laps, he probably would have caught up to the back of Acosta. But I think for Bastianini, this is obviously he won two races, I think it was 2022, early on in the season. But from a consistency point of view, and given what's on the line in terms of contracts this season, he couldn't really have done much more at this juncture. He gelled with the 24 bike, which is a big thing for him, considering the struggles he had adapting to the 23 bike last season. But I think, sort of mentioned it about Acosta, a first win being around the corner. I think Bastianini is in line to win a race soon. Because I think, if anything, the sprint is something Bastianini uses to get even more comfortable for the Grand Prix. I think that will serve him well at some circuits.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you're bang on with that, Rob. It's like he said that, actually, I think last season at some point. He's like, well, I missed a lot of them because of injury, but when he came back, it was really hard for him to adjust to that. Just essentially, you do qualifying laps every lap in a sprint. But like, yeah, I think he's well-placed. And Pete, speaking about Enea and just focusing on others, you wouldn't want to be Ducati management at the minute, would you, trying to figure out who you're going to put beside the world champion next year, would you?
No, you wouldn't. And I think what you would want to do is try and stall it or drag it out as long as you can so you can get some more races under your belt, wouldn't you? And really hope that somebody clearly emerges. Because at the moment, as you say, Martin's had a great start to the year, but now suddenly you've got Bastianini as the top Ducati and overtakes Martin, and he's second in the world championship. So, and that's without taking into account Marc Marquez and everything that he might do going forward. So I think, your main thing at Ducati right now is just to go, look, guys, we're not going to, just tell them all that we're not going to make any decisions yet, and just try and get as much information as you can to try and get some sort of pattern to emerge of who should be on that bike, because you can make a case for all three, can't you?
Yeah. Bring back the days. Remember Repsol Honda had three bikes? That was Dovizioso, Pedrosa, and Stoner, yep. I think Ducati would love that, but that's not going to happen, of course.
Do you know what? Yeah. Just on that point, actually, I think Aprilia are actually doing Ducati a bit of a favour because they're giving Aleix all the time he needs to make a decision. And I think it's exactly by Mugello, sort of like the murmurings are that Aleix is going to make a decision. But if Aleix was to say right here, right now, I'm not going to continue, that would probably push Aprilia to make a quick move for either Martin or Bastianini, but it's actually probably going to give Ducati the time they need, to Pete's point, to see more races and get a better idea of who's in form and putting the better season together.
Yeah, it's just brilliant drama for us. And just, I love the way the writers kind of bat away the questions. That's always my favourite in press conferences, where it's like, oh, we're speaking to everybody, but I want to stay where I am. It's like, come on here, give me something a bit more. But it's so good. And I love the fact we're going into the European season, because that's when everything starts to absolutely just crank it up another notch. I'm going to actually stay with Ducati, but on the manufacturer side, Pete, I want to talk about Pramac and Ducati and their relationship. We've seen a report that Yamaha are reportedly sniffing around Pramac and wanting to have them as a satellite team. Can you just bring us up to date on that, and what's the situation?
It's definitely a rumor in the paddock that exactly how serious it is, who knows, but you do hear the words Pramac and Yamaha. Yeah, so there's certainly, I think there's an option to continue obviously with Ducati, but then there's VR46 are saying that they look to be now close to renew with Ducati, and they have the option, it's on their side. So if they say, yeah, we want to continue Ducati, that's almost a formality. It's there, the option's there on paper. So maybe the obvious link with VR46 and Yamaha won't happen, which again, we'll just underline that VR46 and Rossi by definition are in MotoGP to win or to be as successful as possible, isn't it? And that's all that's going to matter. Even with all the obvious links between Rossi and Yamaha in the past and the present as an ambassador for Yamaha as he is now. That's the situation. It seems like you've got VR46, who seem to be very close to renewing with Ducati, but they want a bit more. They want a factory bike. I think it's pretty clear, isn't it? They know what they did with Bezzecchi last year. I guess they're also seeing the tough start to this year with the year-old bike and knowing that really that's the logical next step for them.
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? We hear this, well, Pramac are the only ones that get the factory bike. But then, of course, Luca Marini had a factory bike. There were five factory bikes only 2 years ago. So you know, that rule didn't apply then. But we're told that, no, you can only, if you want a factory bike, it has to be with Pramac. Very interesting, because Pramac obviously is the official satellite team, if you like. There's a lot of Ducati engineers in that team. They've been fantastically successful. Obviously, Martin leading the championship now, runner-up last year, came very close to making history as the first satellite rider to win. So you'd think on paper, well, just renew it. But obviously, there's always more to these things that meets the eye behind the scenes, isn't there? And who knows exactly how advanced those discussions are. Yamaha, to from their point of view, they're still sort of pretty confident, I think, but not saying much, that they will have a satellite team. So really, there's only, to rewind a bit, there's only three teams, isn't there, that are up for renewal, and that's LCR, VR46 and Pramac. So those are the three options. LCR, people assume, will be staying with Honda. I mean, they've been there with them for so long. So then you've got the Pramac and the VR46 option, if Yamaha are going to come back. We know that that's what they want. We know Quartararo's been pushing for it as well. He wants that data. So it's all about what you offer, isn't it? What you're going to bring to the table, what you offer the satellite teams, whether you can give them, obviously, if you're Yamaha, you can't offer the same level of machinery as Ducati had at the moment. But maybe you can offer the financial side, or you can offer them a longer term deal, more stability. There's always other things that come into play, isn't there? But it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because obviously the longer these things go on without an announcement of a renewal, shall we say, it just shows that it's not an easy decision.
It's a very complex one, because I actually just thought about it. Fermin Aldegar has been signed to a Ducati contract, and where does he go then if Pramac decide to go with Yamaha? They can't run a Yamaha and a Ducati at one team. That'd be incredible. I'd love to see that. But there's a lot of factors into this, and I think who knows what can happen. I think is it Pramac wanted more, like you say, Pete, they want the factory status, but would money from Yamaha potentially be like, we'll give you more money to run our bikes? Very, very interested to see how this goes. But we'll stay with Yamaha and the Japanese manufacturers. Lynn Jarvis, I've seen a report from Autosports essentially saying that he was told, the journalist there, that he's his last year at Yamaha. Pete, that's a massive story in terms of, personnel in the paddock, isn't it? Him leaving at the end of the year.
It is, yeah. I mean, to be honest, he flagged this up in February at the Sepang test at the team launch. I don't know, five or six of us spoke to him afterwards, in the paddock. And he was pretty open about it. He was asked, well, can you say a bit about your future? He joked. He said, you're all thinking you're going to see Davide Brivio here, don't you? So he's aware of all these rumors that were going around about team personnel changes, and he was having a bit of fun with that. But then he did, more seriously say, I'm not getting any younger, and there will be a change in the near future. And he pretty much made clear that that he's not going to be in that exact role. So he's his team principal and managing director of Yamaha Racing, you know, for much longer. And he also spoke about the replacement. You know, would it be someone Japanese? He was asked, and he said, well, I think it'd probably be somebody more European, which also seems to fit in with the report that you mentioned from Autosport. So this is kind of it's more details on what he kind of flagged up at the Sepang test, which is that it's a big move, as you say, because he's been there. He's one of those guys that brought Rossi in, isn't he?
Yep.
Way back in 2003, 2004, and started that whole golden era, if you like, for Yamaha. So, maybe signing Quartararo will be, it's a fitting, if you like, a fitting end to that chapter, maybe, of Lynn at the head of the Yamaha Racing team.
I was going to say, Rob, that would be Lynn Jarvis's his ending legacy. You say he signed Quartararo to that contract, you know, he's secured their future. Speaking about Quartararo, he did mention in the pre-race press conference that, there's big changes on the way, and they had this news, of course, but he mentioned about the bike. He can't really say anything. They need the changes fast, because he did say that they had they're working in a really different way compared to they would maybe a couple of years ago, but the results don't lie. He was 15th in the sprint, and let me just check again. He was 12th in the Grand Prix. I mean, it's not really shown any progress, is it?
No, I think Quartararo will be hoping those changes take place now. Because, as much as he signed the new deal and, it's security and obviously a bumper payday, great for Lynn Jarvis that he's pulled that off for Yamaha before he essentially departs. And obviously for Quartararo to stabilize where he is, I think is important. And for him himself, if he can help bring the Yamaha project back to where it needs to be, that will be something sort of legacy changing for him and his career. But at the moment, it's just, there's no signs of it ending. I know he tried to put a positive spin on it after the race, but frankly, there isn't really a positive spin at the moment. Rins, considering where Rins was last year at COTA, a race winner, and this time around, he crashed out, but before crashing, he was absolutely nowhere. And I think someone of Quartararo's ability, and this is no, sort of shade on any of the riders who are typically further down the order, but Quartararo shouldn't be running in 15th, 14th, 13th position. He's a world champion as recently as 2021, and the fact that he's struggling so much to just even crack the top 10 shows how bad at the moment Yamaha's situation is. And although, they've signed all these engineers from Ducati and they've brought loads of new people in, different methods of working, the results at the end of the day are still the same. Of course, there needs to be a waiting process, because it'll take time, but it's not making the job any easier for Quartararo at the moment.
Definitely not. I believe Carl Crutchlow is testing this week. I heard on a broadcast, I think he's testing the Catalunya, so a private test. Obviously, they missed out in Portimao. Yamaha need to get something sorted, because I believe they were testing stuff throughout that weekend, because they missed Portimao essentially. So who knows what's going to happen when they get the Jerez. I just want to focus on Honda at the very end, Pete. It was a very difficult weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's almost an understatement, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, it was almost a nightmare, really, wasn't it? I mean, they'd had a difficult time in Portimao, hadn't they, as well? With lots of rear grip issues, so it was a big question mark. What will COTA be like? Obviously, having won the race last year as well, there was some optimism there, quite realistically. I mean, Marquez's record as well speaks for itself on the Honda, and then Rins, of course, winning last year. But as Mia, I think, explained, that the Honda's changed so much that it's lost its strong point, which worked so well at COTA, which was that sort of, the front end, the braking and everything else. And so they don't really have, I think he said, we don't have any positives now. We've taken away that front end positive to try and improve the traction, but they're not really gaining in that area now either. And really, I mean, they were the bottom of the timesheets, really, weren't they? All four Hondas most of the weekend. So it wasn't just that one rider didn't like the track or had a difficult time. They were all in pretty much the same position. They were all struggling. And they, a bit like Yamaha, they desperately need testing, don't they? They need to get hundreds of laps with all four of them really on private test tracks, working through parts, working through setups and trying to get some sort of real clear progress here, because this is two events now that have been really, really difficult.
Yeah, it's just, it's crazy to think about. They're consistently all with each other when you look at the timings. So it's like, in practice, the bottom four, it's most likely four Hondas. And it's like, it just shows they're all having issues, but they're not even issues that are all the same. They're having, some are having problems with the rear. Then you hear a different thing. Someone says, oh, that was okay. You're like, this doesn't make sense. And I think Joao Mir hit the nail on the head. He said the situation is desperate. There is just, they need to do something rapidly, Rob. And you know, he crashed out both races. You know, and Zarco crashed out of the Grand Prix yesterday. So did Taka Nakagami. And Mir called Luca Marini the lone survivor, essentially. And he was in 16th and last place. And it's just really hard to see how they're going to improve, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not something you want to say, but the Hondas spent more time in the gravel than I think on track this weekend. You know, Joan Mir crashed in both races, Nakagami crashed in both races, Zarco crashed in the sprint and then retired from the Grand Prix. And then I think it's the second time in three rounds that Marini has finished a Grand Prix behind someone who's crashed, is mind-blowing. You know, for someone, you know, we spoke about Rins and his performance last year at COTA. Marini was on the front row last season.
Yeah,
and now
true.
He's essentially touring at the back of the field, just trying to put laps on the Honda. And, you know, the margin for Marini, obviously it's a new bike for him. I mean, it's a new bike in general, but it's a new bike for him. And the margin from the rider in front of him, I guess, has been getting smaller, which is a good sign. But then again, in Qatar, it was Miller who crashed and then managed to get back ahead of Marini. And then this time around, it was Alex Marquez. It's just, you know, those sorts of things can't be happening. And that, sadly, is a reflection on Honda, who, you know, have fallen in the last years to a degree that I don't think any of us could have imagined. But they've got a lot of work to do, even more than Yamaha. And like you said, when you look at the timing screens, pretty much every session, it feels like you're seeing the two Yamahas, the four Hondas, occupy the sixth last places. Yeah. Maybe Augusto Fernandez is somewhere there at different times, but there's a lot of problems at Honda at the moment.
Yeah, and I don't even know what to say about it. I just, when I said, I think I said he was off camera, Marquez crashed out and he'd rather be at the front. And he probably looks back and goes, well, thank God I'm not on the Honda, because even he couldn't have salvaged a good result on that bike yesterday. So, yeah, a very interesting weekend on both sides of the grids. You know, we had epic battles up front, but even at the back, there was struggles. Just to quickly all update you, so Danny Pedrosa will be doing a wild card at Jerez. Very excited about that. Of course, he was very fast here last year. And, yeah, we'll be back next time for our podcast that we review, or a preview of the Spanish Grand Prix. If you enjoyed it, make sure to like the video if you're watching on YouTube. Leave a comment what you thought about the race weekend. Follow, subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from. Leave a 5-star review. That helps us out massively on the Apple, Spotify charts list. So yeah, leave a review. Hopefully they're all nice. But yeah, and enjoy this podcast, guys. It was a pleasure to talk about a great Grand Prix. And yeah, we'll see you next time.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.